I'm really pleased to be here, and I'm a little bit humbled to be here too as I look out at some of the great people who have taken time to come to this talk, because when I think about the direction and the advances that we're seeing in technology and the use of technology, I think about the great work that Kevin Fu has been doing in medical Internet of Things world, or that Susan Landau has been doing for decades, along with others in the crypto wars that we'll hear about later, or Paul Kotcher and his work in cryptography and side channel attacks. I think my friend Simpson Garfield stepped out, but great in privacy. So as I think about this and I think about you, the folks in this room, I've decided not to use slides today, and I want to start out with a question for the audience. And for those people who know me, I always have a question or two for others, because I sometimes feel like the student when I come and speak on stage, so it's always good to be able to take away and learn something. How many of you all would consider yourselves computer scientists, computer engineers, something in that ilk? Hand raise. So it looks like almost everyone in this room has some sort of an affiliation in the computer science, computer engineering, electrical engineering space. And I think that's really important when we think about where we are today and where we need to be going. So I titled my talk, and I did use the government word, I guess, cybersecurity. But when we think about security and what we need to do there, and we think about, is it about business or is it about technology? I could imagine that I could sit down with you all at the end of the day with an adult beverage, and we could have lots of great conversations about deterministic random bit generators or different policy kinds of capabilities to protect our information, or we could talk about why we still haven't had the year of PKI, all kinds of really good conversations. And we do this because we recognize that our work in cybersecurity and privacy is really vital to organizations today to reap the full benefits of technology. Innovations abound, and our reliance on technology continues to grow. And we realize that the kinds of protections from the security space and from the privacy space are more and more important every day. But sometimes it's hard to feel optimistic in this space. You know, when I sit down with other people at the National Institute of Standards and Technology, when I sit down with one of my colleagues, Bill Phillips, who's a Nobel Prize winner in physics, he says, you know, you guys have been doing that cybersecurity thing for a long time, and it feels like things are getting worse instead of better. What do you do all day? How are you making a difference? Right? And so sometimes we face the challenges that we face with our data and our applications and our infrastructure and finding ways to secure that and maintain our privacy feels a bit daunting. So we have many, many presentations at conferences that kind of walk out and you're not really quite sure how to feel. Well, I want to tell you that I'm a little bit different when I think about technology and the advances that we are seeing. I think these are incredibly exciting times. And when I think about 20, okay, so 30 years ago when I started in this space, and I think about the changes that we have seen in technology. I can remember when I got my first laptop at NIST. It was like a sewing machine. Does anybody remember those? A few people do. And if you carried them home, you were just too exhausted to work because you had to lug it so far. So you said, maybe I won't take this home anymore. And we have more power in our watch today than what we did in those luggables. So lots of really, really exciting changes have occurred in the technology space over the last 30 years. And I think what we've seen for the past 30 years is nothing to what we're going to see in the next 20 years in this space and the changes that we're going to see in the advances in technology. Now, the pessimistic side can say, oh gosh, from a cybersecurity perspective, when I work with my other government colleagues, they want to shut down some of those changes and not recognize them and hope that they don't exist. And frankly, I think for some of them, they have much bigger challenges. If you think about some of the things that we're seeing in terms of technology capabilities for like implantables and things like that, and you think about going into secure spaces and how are they going to be able to tell, you know, the good guys from the bad actors in those spaces. So there really are some incredible challenges that we see, but if we look back in the as to where we've been in cybersecurity, where we are today, And we think about some of the common themes, it might really help us in terms of where do we need to go in the next 20 or 30 years. So we can see great advances in phones, and yet we heard a presentation by Dr. Anderson about how that technology can also be used by the bad actors. When we think about some of Kevin Fu's great research in medical IoT devices, where you have infusion pumps that had never been hooked to the internet and now they are, and the bad things that can happen, again, we have those discussions about how to patch those machines or how to stop this from happening or stop that from happening. And it's always about the technology. Or we have questions about what is cyber warfare. But we don't spend enough time thinking about how good cybersecurity or good security can be good business, and good business is really good security. And what do we need to do to get there? Well, from the lens of the National Institute of Standards and Technology, we do think about that. We are an agency under the U.S. Department of Commerce, so we're one of the only U.S. federal agencies heavily involved in cybersecurity, where we're not coming from that national defense perspective. We're really coming from that national economic perspective. And as we think about our work, sometimes people think about us as the technology folks or the crypto folks. Sometimes those folks who write the control catalog that's impossible to meet, or really our work since the early 1970s, when the NIST program first got started in what was then computer security, has always been around the lens of risk management. And in the computer security space, in the security space today, even today, We often have a debate about whether risk management is the right lens. Should we just tell these people to do these things? Should we design a system so that the user can't do this or can only do that? And from the NISC perspective, we've kind of been fighting an uphill battle since the 70s about this look at risk management and how you can help people make good risk management decisions as a fundamental for good business. So we do have a very strong technical research agenda at NIST, and I don't want to undermine that with my presentation today. Our work in cryptography is well known throughout the world. Today, we have a program at NIST overall in quantum computing, so we're working closely with our physicists on quantum devices. We're working closely with our mathematics program at NIST, looking at quantum information, and out of this is coming the work from my area in quantum-resistant cryptography and how do we have appropriate standards for that. We also recently announced a program to look at cryptographic standards for lightweight devices, thinking about the world of the Internet of Things. NIST has an active program in AI, like many, probably everyone in this room, but we are looking at it from a metrology perspective, a measurement perspective. And as we look at it from a security measurement perspective, how do we measure something that's always changing? How do we measure something where we don't have constant data sets or base data sets, et cetera? In the NIST security program, we are also doing a tremendous amount of work on metrology. If you can't measure it at NIST, does it exist? Or in the case of our work, if you can't measure it, how can you manage it? And recently, I saw something from a Congressional Research Service that noted that U.S. federal agencies are spending well over 30% of their IT budget on cybersecurity. And certainly our work with critical infrastructure, we see the millions and millions of dollars that people are spending on cybersecurity. But getting back to this technology versus business question, when you go into a room with an executive, how can you tell an executive that, how can we ensure that we're getting what we pay for? My boss used to ask me, if I put a dollar in for security, how do I know that I'm getting a dollar's worth of security out? And I think we still struggle with that. I think sometimes from a technology perspective, we think about the technology first and foremost. But we don't think about the business side and what we're putting in and how can we measure its effectiveness from different kinds of exploits all the way up the chain to a monetary standpoint. So NIST, through its lens of risk management, really manages its research agenda, its research portfolio. And as we've done this, we've had been working on the risk management framework for U.S. federal agencies for over a decade. And we had through an executive order with the previous administration, we were asked to do a framework for improving critical infrastructure cybersecurity. Yes, you can tell the folks in Washington wrote that executive order. But we lovingly refer to this as a CSF, at least I do. And the framework took a look at all of the good standards and best practices that are out there. We took a look at different risk management strategies, and what we realized is that very often they stopped within an organization to those people who were the designers, the engineers, and the builders. But we didn't give any tools for executives to think about cybersecurity or security of technology. So with the CSF, we came up with 5 high-level words: identify, protect, detect, respond, recover. And these were words that you could have a business conversation around as well as a technical conversation. And I think, again, that through that exercise, both nationally and internationally, more businesses, more organizations started thinking about cybersecurity as part of their overall business program than ever before. There's been some research done that said somewhere between 30 and 40% of all companies in the U.S. have adopted a risk management approach for thinking about cybersecurity, and they've integrated it into their businesses since the development of the CSF. So we created a conversation where good business becomes good security, and good security is good business. I think we need to continue to work as we're building out technologies to think about not just the technology itself and not just the way that we are going to use it. I think we need to consider privacy engineering. NIST has come up with characteristics to capture privacy engineering capabilities, because lots of organizations have talked about their commitment to privacy until you get in a room with engineers and developers and they say, yeah, I have no idea how to take those good words and actually implement them into outcomes that can really achieve privacy for my organization. So our characteristics of looking through a privacy lens of predictability, manageability, and disassociability, we may not have the perfect framework there, but we are starting a conversation with both business and technical experts around these themes, and we've got to continue those sorts of conversations. Not when I say we, I mean the collective we in this audience, not just NIST. NIST is going to continue its work in privacy, so in terms of our risk management framework and controls to support strong cybersecurity risk management, we have incorporated privacy controls in our latest editions of our activities. When we do risk assessments, we are working on methodologies that bring both security and risk management and privacy together. As we continue our work at NIST, and we think about the kinds of capabilities that we need for tomorrow, we've thought a lot about the security life cycle and ways to get better security, better software, stronger software, through things like tool chains. So how do we have confidence in the tools that we are using to build software today? And what kinds of warnings, what kinds of tests, what kinds of capabilities do you have in those tool chains? Now, certainly, Very large companies provide certain a set of tools that their developers use. But as we see technology everywhere, there are more people writing code that are not part of these big organizations. They're part of small and medium-sized businesses. And they're finding tools that on the web that they can use to increase their efficiency and their productive capabilities to get something out on the market faster. How can we help them have better tools to provide code that is more reliable and resilient in ways that still allows them to get their work done? How do we help educate consumers so that when they are buying products and services, they are willing to pay a premium when a company has incorporated security into their development process and they're able to demonstrate that? In the US federal government, you get no extra credit for doing something like that. In fact, somebody could say, does it actually increase the cost of what I want to buy? Maybe I don't want that. So we need to work not just with the developers, but we need to continue to have better educated organizations. We all look at safety features when we buy appliances or automobiles or things like that. But as we're thinking about connected devices, as we're thinking about vehicles that drive themselves, et cetera, what kinds of criteria will consumers put on the developers? What should we be asking them? Do we have a vocabulary to do that? And I don't believe we do right now, because we're either in the technology space or the business space, and we're not joining those together. NIST has a program in behavioral cybersecurity, which I think is a critical component in any program as we are building more software and more hardware, and we're doing those integrations. Are we considering the user as part of that system? So when we talk about some of the functions that we saw in the last briefing, was it run by computer scientists first? Did we have a diversity of a team building this together? Did we have a vocabulary where we could talk to people and they could understand what we are saying as computer scientists and what their needs are? Or did we assume the way it would work? Many, many years ago, I spent a lot of time, before there were any PKI standards, et cetera, working in that space and did a lot of work in standards development. And every time I see, when I'm sitting at home, something that comes across the screen that says, your certificate is expired, what would you like to do? I think to myself, we are incentivizing bad behavior as cybersecurity practitioners with that kind of error message. Because how many of you have said, yep, I want to keep going, I'm at home and I want to get to that website? Why are we giving those sorts of error messages back to end users? What kinds of tools are we giving them so that they can cope with that kind of error message? Does it have any meaning to them? I don't think it does. And so as we're building out technologies, as we're building out capabilities, we can't just think about ourselves and how we would use it. We need a diversity, a much more diverse team development so that we can look at it from many, many different angles, and we don't have that today. In our behavioral security program, we also need to be thinking about how to make it easy to do the right thing for end users, hard to do the wrong thing, and easy to back up if you do the wrong thing. Again, today, we don't do that with the kinds of tools and capabilities that we put out in the security space. Lastly, from a technology to a business perspective, I want to talk a little bit about tech transfer and a program that we started at NIST where we're working closely with industry and different business sectors and bringing them together. And that's at our National Cybersecurity Center of Excellence, where we are trying to demonstrate security architectures for different sorts of business challenges and understand what those are. So we worked with experts like Kevin Fu, but we also brought in many of the infusion pump folks from a healthcare perspective, as well as folks from hospitals, to think about how these infusion pumps are used, and when they're connected to the network, what does that mean? How do we put security controls around those infusion pumps in ways that allow them to do their main job and not get in the way? Where we think like the business developers, does this mean I have to take this back through FDA testing? What kinds of features can I put in place where I'm not jeopardizing safety? How do we do this with real-world products and services? How do we take the good standards and best practices that we all want to see people use and put them in place from a business environment perspective where the users are sitting side by side with us, and we publish these architectures, we publish these capabilities so that other organizations can pick them up and use them? Are we saying this is the only way to do something? No. Are we saying that this is a way that met the business objectives first and provided these security capabilities? Yes. Because too often we bring technologists in a room and they kind of take over a conversation over here and the business side is over here and together, and we don't meet in the middle anywhere. And again, if we're going to bring more technology into our lives in ways that provide tremendous benefits as long as they meet some of these security principles and that we think about privacy, we can't just talk to ourselves. We can't just talk to security people who think about security first and foremost. We have to have more diversity. We have to have better teams. We have to be better listeners. We have to stop getting them to think about our vocabulary. Anybody think about the, we're doing a project now, and this at the center, and one of the security engineers was talking with me about it, and something in the medical field, and he was talking about PACS systems. Well, I've done a lot of work in identity management over the years, so for me, the acronym PACS was physical access control. That's what a PACS system is, right? So we're having this conversation, and it's making no sense to me. So 5 minutes into it, I said, wait a minute, what are we talking about here? The healthcare community thinks about PACS as picture archive systems. They're the radiologist of the world. We can't write, and we can't give them tools that use our vernacular. We have to do it in ways that meet what their world is. And too often, we want to talk with them about expired certificates and what those certificate and why this is really a bad idea. So we have to get much better at coming together with these different infrastructures and understanding those infrastructures first, and our world has to enter theirs, not the other way around. I think this is critical if we're looking ahead and we're really going to make changes in the space of technology that has the security and the privacy principles that we're all striving for in this room. And the last thing that I wanted to spend a few minutes talking about then, of course, is workforce. And the workforce in the cybersecurity space, in the security space, there are over, I think, 30,000 open jobs today that we are not filling. But I think the way that we're teaching material and the way that we're demonstrating outstanding success in this space needs to broaden. So if Cybersecurity Awareness Month is coming up in October, and I've already received six invitations for regional attack and defend kinds of conferences where students come in. And as they're playing, as they're doing red teaming, as they're playing capture the flag, I look in the room year after year after year, and I don't see any diversity in these rooms, or very little diversity. And I think to myself, would I have been interested in a red teaming event only? What other kinds of tools, what other kinds of ways can we reach people to demonstrate the kinds of analytical skills that we need in this field? Because I think we're attracting a very important segment, but a very small segment of the kinds of diverse teams that we need as we're putting technology in every aspect of our lives. So what other kinds of programs can we provide to students so that they can demonstrate, again, the important analytical skills that we need, the important coding skills that we need, the important capabilities that we need in order to tackle these challenges? The kinds of competitions that we run across the country today are good competitions, and we should keep those. But they alone are not enough. We have to do more to have a prepared workforce in this space. NIST is hosting a workshop, an annual conference in as part of our National Initiative for Cybersecurity Education is coming up in the November timeframe. And I keep asking for a conversation about the skill sets that we need and the ways that we can measure those skill sets and encourage people to adopt those sorts of skills. So we have we've done some things around workforce so that you can see the kinds of skills, but to really be able to demonstrate them, I feel like we need better ways to do that and more ways to demonstrate the kinds of skills that we are looking for. So, again, as we stop and think about business, as we stop and think about technology, as we stop and we think to ourselves, we've been in this game of whack-a-mole for 30 years, how are we going to get out of it? Certainly, I believe R&D and standards are an essential way to help us. But I think we have to have humans as part of the equation, And I think we need much, much greater diversity in the space. And we have to stop thinking about people coming into our world and our way of understanding. And we have to broaden our perspectives greatly if we're really going to achieve the kind of national economic base that this country can have around the use of technology. The use of technology to help us in healthcare, the use of technology to help us in financial services, to have better energy conservation, to have, I'm all about self-driving cars because I drive from Pennsylvania either to Gaithersburg, Maryland every day or into DC. So I would love to have these kinds of tools to be able to use to improve the quality of my life. But in order to get there, we have to think around the edge cases. And that doesn't just mean a degree in computer scientist. We need to have more social scientists at meetings like this. We need to have attorneys and people who understand policy to be participating with us, even when we're building technical solutions where we say, what would they offer? Those folks need to be at the table. We need a much more diverse workplace because people use technologies in ways that we, as those who are trying to provide better protections, don't envision as those technologies are coming out. And I think if we had more diversity, we would do a better job building and thinking about the entire life cycle and use of those. So we need to make cybersecurity as an important goal for better business, and we need better business to have cybersecurity as a foundation. And with that, I'll take some questions. Or not.
Right. Questions, please come up to the mic in the front and state your name and affiliation. Are you accepting any Crypto Wars questions today?
Sure.
Uh-oh. Crypto Wars 1 and 2.
That's right. I was an official key escrow agent, woohoo, back in the 90s. So the question from Susan is, how many keys did we escrow? And I believe there were about 5,000 devices built. Rainbow Technologies is where we did the actual chips, and I can't remember the number of chips. It was greater than that.
I did our book in 1998. We talked to AT&T in 97. At that point, they'd sold 15 to 17,000.
That's the number. Yeah, but I don't think they, well,
some
I'm not
the,
so.
A large portion was to the FBI.
Right. And not all of those were the commercial ones? There were some prototypes in there?
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Sarah Miller. I'm an insider threat researcher at the Software Engineering Institute. So some of the questions you had around having more diverse representation within cybersecurity, what kinds of outreach strategies have you tried so far at NIST, or what kinds of feedback are you looking for on how to do that?
So we're always looking for feedback on better ways to do this. In terms of things that we are doing at NIST, we have a program that looks at K through 12, and then at college age, and then from a workforce perspective. In addition to traditional ways of, say, a four-year college degree. We are trying to think about what kinds of certificates people need in order to be able to get there faster and get into the field. And also, there is a big emphasis today on it's not enough just to go to school, but you need the actual hands-on experience, and how do you get good hands-on experience? And I think that one is a really, really big challenge.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. I'm Shinor from Intel. I just want, it's a comment, actually, another question. You mentioned this, using different terms, okay? It was really lucky because the use of the term, same term was different. Now, there's worse case, far worse case, which is very, very slight difference. So you can work a lot on the bin system and then find out everything fails.
Yes.
And that's the real problem.
Yes. No? Thank you.
I'm Paul Balog. I'm a student at Villanova University.
I'm sorry, from where?
Villanova University. You did like mentioning self-driving cars, and you were interested in starting a dialogue, a public dialogue regarding security. Is there any form of government intervention when it comes to self-driving cars? Like, do they have like a public open source version of a self-driving car and how to improve its security, for example?
So the Department of Transportation, and now I'm going to be acronym deprived today, NHTSA, is really taking a look at autonomous vehicles and what that means. And the question, do they have any tools that they are putting out for developers or designers or researchers to use? To date, I am not aware that they have any. We have been doing some work with them at our National Cybersecurity Center of Excellence, and we're actually looking at some different kinds of security architectures that we could put out for conversation and dialogue.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hi, I'm Chan Ho-bae from NSR in South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
Let's think the security technology as a product. So the price issue that comes with that, it is very hard to make a exact price because the company or client have no idea how much it will benefit from in terms of ROI. So I want to ask you, how can we deal with this problem?
So I think the overall question is, how do we get a better economic model around security so that people are willing to look at this and pay a premium? And I think that starts with dialogue and understanding as to why it matters. Typically, we talk about what it does rather than why it matters. At NIST, our publications that we're doing at the center, we're trying to do a two-pager that addresses why does this matter. That's so much harder to write than what we did and the technology piece of it. One of my colleagues in the audience has helped us with that. And to get that quick snapshot and to be able to say to a hospital chief financial officer who's looking at buying a new capability and they can quantify how many people they're going to be able to detect this disease when they buy this device. And we talk to them about software-defined networks for their medical IoT devices, you know? We have to be able to have conversations where they can balance these, and it's hard. But I think one way to help doing this is to be able to show to be able to have better measurement capabilities so they understand what they're really getting, rather than, I bought this piece of technology and I don't know what it is, but I needed to buy it in order to pass an audit, which is often what happens today. If I put this in, I get the check the box, I'm good to go, and we can move on, and I can focus back in the world where I am comfortable. And I can imagine that this kind of talk and this kind of conversation is not something that you typically get at Usenix. One of my first conferences that I got to attend was out in California at one of the first Usenix cybersecurity symposiums, and I thought it was like the greatest thing in the world. Everybody was talking about security, and we could have these deep conversations. But I think we've gone a little overboard in our community and not thought enough about the balance, which is a reason that I was pleased to be invited here, but not sure if this is what the audience really wanted. Yes, sir.
Yes. Good evening. My name is Pierluigi De Simone. I am from the European Space Agency.
Space,
and especially navigation, that there is a lot of issue about cybersecurity. Maybe we can continue afterwards. I simply would like to ask about talking about diversity. Also, the European Commission is very involved now in cybersecurity. It's very popular today, cybersecurity. And I would like to know if you have regular contact, exchanging with the Commission, with the agency. Maybe I can be a probe for this. Is if there is any exchange, because I think that all what you say, what you do, I've been looking on the Center of Excellence as something that I think we need to exchange somehow.
Yes.
So I can give my contact, but I don't want to bother. But,
yes.
But do you have this kind of...
Yes, I will catch you... in a few minutes on that. But the question, actually, NIST has already gotten a lot of questions about what we're going to do about cybersecurity in some of the new space agencies that have come up in the U.S. federal government and how we're going to be there to support them. And my answer is yes.
Hopefully you're not reading it.
Thank you all.